I'm going to take your things you want to cover. If you don't tell me things you want to cover, we're not covered. So what would you like me to talk about for exam review? Top of there, or do I need to? I probably should do this. Yeah.
I guess concepts that we would be provided by practice material for versus things that we should kind of be expected to know off the top of our heads.
It's sort of. Functions where specifically you were looking at, and what else?
Can you? I don't know. I guess what else should we talk about? I guess there's also like P4.
Okay, P4. Okay. Other things? Yeah.
Ingestion calculations.
Ingestion control calculations?
Sure.
Okay. Anything else we all? Okay. I'll see if there's a second round. Otherwise, this might be a very short class. Okay. So general format of questions. So I haven't written most of the final yet, but probably it's going to be sort of likely similar to quizzes, but with, you know, some cases where you might fill in a table and more, and possibly some short written answers, like not more than a sentence. We have to grade it in 2 days, or we're supposed to grade it in 2 days, and I'm interested in not having to have awkward things when I'm preparing for my travel after the week after. So I hope to make it easy to grade. And yeah, I guess I would say, like, unlike quizzes, probably we'll try to have questions that might deal with topics from multiple parts of the semester. And I guess as far as information that will be provided, I'm not going to provide, so I guess I don't expect you to memorize sort of socket function names, but we might want you to know there's a function to open a connection to create a socket, and I guess an end argument format. Yeah, we want you to know, well, there's a create socket operation, there's a connect operation, there's a bind operation, that sort of thing. We expect you to, like, a bind meaning assigned to address operation. But if you don't know the names of it, you don't know what the formative arguments, that's fine. But we expect you to know kind of the general kind of layout of the API. And don't expect you to know any P4 syntax generally. If you need information about the format or size of headers, we will provide it. Otherwise, we don't expect you to know it. And generally, as far as code goes, you know, for code, if it's obvious what sort of function arguments were intended, we don't care about the syntax. If we can figure out what you meant to, like, what you would have come up with if you had the time to debug it, we should give full credit for that. We're not, you know, that's not do that. And probably we're not going to ask many socket programming questions anyways. So I guess also probably few sort of socket before programming questions. Few to zero, zero to few. Because there's so much other stuff we covered that I think is more important versus the effort of creating that sort of thing. And then we have ask about congestion control calculations. So congestion control. This is not the one I want to do that with. This is. Where is my window? There we go. Okay, so I guess there's different. So with congestion control, kind of the key idea is that in the steady state, sort of once things get all, once we're out of the beginning of connection phase, sort of not in beginning of connection, is that we do additive increase and multiplicative decrease. That's the big thing we want you to know about, is that idea. And, you know, why is it important that we do, you know, this particular type of thing, and that this yields sort of fair sharing between connections, you know, if the additive amount is the same. Yeah.
Sorry, is this recorded?
Yeah. And also that I will post this text document. So that yields fair connections, and we kind of have the intuition of increase slowly to avoid overload and decrease quickly to react to overload, because sort of congestion collapse is so bad. So that's like the biggest thing as far as our, you know, congestion control. I'm not sure what was exactly on our calculations, but that's the biggest sort of thing maintenance we're doing in when we do figure out our numbers for congestion control. So then we have a few things that are also happen but are less important. So in beginning of connection, we want to rapidly discover sort of the window size and the TCP strategy. Interesting. I guess we do it on this one. TCP strategy for this is this slow start, which is, you know, really is exponential sort of multiplicative increase. Something which I guess caused some confusion, including on the reliable assignment, so I should mention, when I talk about additive increase here, I'm saying additive increase per round trip time. So this means sort of 1 over round trip time factor increase per packet. Right. And multiplicative increase, this is again sort of per loss event. And this multiplicative increase is, this is one sort of constant factor increase per packet. So So I think this is something which I know caused a bunch of confusion on Reliable 3, was people said, oh, we need to do additive increase, therefore I increase by one per packet. That's, when we're talking about additive increase, we mean the increase per round trip time, because we want to talk about the increases being the same thing no matter what our current window size is. And if we increase per packet, you know, that means that if our window size is larger, well, we have more packets per unit time, and we're increasing faster. And slow start, in fact, does a constant increase per packet that ends up being multiplicative if we think of what happens per round trip time, if we like normalize it to the same amount of time. So those were the key, so those are like the most important parts of sort of standard congestion control applications. Then we had some optimizations. So one was sort of temporarily adjusting the window size for missing packets. And the intuition here is sort of, intuition is normally, one packet act equals one less packet in network. If we want to maintain, you know, n packets network, we should increase window, or not increase window, we should move the window edge and send a new packet. But on a loss without selective acknowledgments, you know, duplicate acts equal still one less packet in network, but we normally can't advance the window because we need to change the window size. So an optimization TCP does is that it says, oh, if I have duplicate acts, that means there should be room for an extra packet that there normally wouldn't be, because it's not, because I know from the duplicate act that we lost a packet in the network, and my window size, you know, so want the window size to equal kind of the number of packets in the network, and it's not going to do that anymore. Now, of course, when we have a duplicate act, we're probably also adjusting the window size lower with multiplicative decrease, so this is an adjustment on top of that. Adjustment after the sort of multiplicative decrease. So that was one optimization. And another optimization was sort of was distinguishing between timeouts and sort of normal losses detected with dupacks. So TCP, sort of many versions of TCP kind of reset to slow start on timeouts, but, you know, do the multiplicative decrease on a dupack. And I guess there were a bunch of other congestion control things we talked about that don't fit in here. So we also talked about sort of delay-based congestion control, which is just look at the round trip time changing instead of losses, and adjusting the increase decrease factors. E.g. cubic to not be additive or multiplicative. You know, something in between, and something else I was thinking of. And also sort of using selective acknowledgement ACK or ECN information. Yeah.
Could you discuss the intuition behind like reset to slow start on timeout?
Can I discuss the intuition behind reset to slow start on timeout? Yeah, so the idea here is that something is, you know, that the timeout, so that normally, that, yeah, normally if our window size is kind of large, we should, you know, most of the packets should get through, and we should get our three due backs. And this means that if the retransmit on due back heuristic doesn't solve the problem, doesn't work, then probably the network is very congested, is kind of the intuition. Very congested, or at least, you know, and therefore probably very different from what we thought it was, and we should kind of remeasure. That's kind of the intuition behind that.
Now, when you said reset, it means reset to all the way to the very initial window size, and then increasing it, right?
Question, reset to the initial window size? Yes. So that's what they originally did. So modern TCP variants might do something else, because, you know, as we mentioned, like, they're not even doing quite additive increase anymore. They're doing something that's, you know, in between. And the reason for doing something in between is that kind of both slow start and additive increase, like, are kind of both wrong, in the sense that additive increase is a bit slow, multiplicative increase is a bit too fast. You know. That answer your question? Okay. Other questions? So my general policy is that if you think there needs to be a clarification on the question, you should, if it's a free response, answer with an answer. If it's a multiple choice, write an asterisk with an explanation of what you think needed to be clarified. We're going to just grade multiple choice sort of as yes or no. We'll look at those clarifications, and like the thing we are looking for is, does the sort of your extra explanation tell us how you intend to answer the question given the information you think is missing? Right, so please don't say, oh, I think it could be either A or B. Please say, I think it's A if X or B if Y, you know, and then that's something we can give partial credit for. Maybe we can give full credit if we think, oh yeah, I guess you weren't really supposed to know that. Or I guess, you know, we don't think that's the good reading of the question, but that's not what we're trying to test on, you know. Or we can give partial credit sensibly in that case. If you just give me two answers, I'm going to grade the lower of the two. Because I've had too many problems with people trying to, you know, hedge between two answers, hoping to get half credit. That is not a strategy we want you to use, and not a one strategy I want to create. Okay. Other questions on this congestion control calculations? Okay, so since there's more people here, other topics you'd like me to talk about? Yeah.
Encapsulation, and especially the encapsulation enable.
Encapsulation and types of encapsulation?
Yeah, I guess like the 4x4 table you showed up last time on the slide.
Yes, and the type table on slide, okay. Other things? I'm just collecting topics before going into them. Yeah.
Random early detection, how to know the feasible.
Okay. Yeah.
Routing tables.
Routing tables, more specific in anything or just?
It's just like differences between like a switch and a router.
Switch v router, okay.
Can you do the distance vectors in terms of routing?
Okay, so let's organize these by time. Topic. Okay, so routing tables. So routing table says is a table of, you know, so I guess what we classically call a routing table is given, is a mapping from IP address range or other network, you know, other network address. We haven't seen many examples of other network address. I think the only one we've really seen is MPLS. That's kind of another network address, but not really. Where to send. And in IP, where to send is, you know, both which output port and the gateway, or the next gateway slash next router, if any. So kind of an example, very common routing table you might have is like, let's say our internal network is, you know, so we have router C that connects 10.1.0.0, I guess 10.1.16 and 10.2.16 and 10.3.16 and the internet, our routing table might be 10.1.16 goes to, you know, port 0, so I guess I should use interface 0, output interface to avoid confusion with port numbers. You know, 10.2.16 goes to interface 1, and 10.3.16 goes to interface 2, and the default, and let's say they're connected to the internet via, and let's say, and 10.3 connects to the rest of the network, to the internet, to everything else. So you might have, like, say, a default that goes via interface to gateway 10.3, some other router. Yeah, that would be an example routing table. Yeah.
You said interface isn't a port. What exactly is it then?
So it's a port on a router. I'm just using the word interface to avoid confusion with TCP or UDP port numbers. Yes, you can use the word port, but I'm going to try to separate interface, which interface and port numbers, just for avoidance if we're talking about port numbers and interfaces at the same time. Does that answer your question? Yeah. So, like, this is the kind of information, and this is probably, like, no gateway, you know, just use the local network way of finding machines. So, you know, the gateway is needed, you know, if the, you know, sort of ultimate destination isn't on the next network, right? Isn't on the directly connected network. If it's on the directly connected network, that network knows how to do it. And so this routing table is a sort of network layer thing. you know, it's about connecting, you know, the layer that's about connecting networks together. And, you know, it relies on us, on the sort of link layer understanding how to get frames to specific machines on the, you know, networks connected directly to the interfaces. Right, we don't have specific instructions about how do we get it to them. So that gets us to kind of switches versus routers. So a router is sort of acting at an IP or similar layer and connecting different networks together. And a switch is acting at, you know, Ethernet or Wi-Fi or similar layer, connecting and sort of implementing the local network. And typically, you know, the Ethernet or Wi-Fi layer might, you know, has a notion of broadcast to everyone, all that sort of the IP layer doesn't. Typically, these work with hardware, sort of MAC addresses, not globally usable IP addresses, because we're only concerned with local connections. And, you know, typically, so yeah, that's the main difference. So, so I guess a thing which can, you know, something, you know, a reason I didn't like give a precise distinction between the two in class very much is because, like, this, you know, we can use sort of IP-like techniques with MAC addresses. We could do that. And there are some, like, real proposals to do that, and maybe some data centers do this. So, you know, aside from which types of addresses are used, you know, and how big the network tends to be, you know, it's not, it doesn't tell you that much. It doesn't that much about the implementation technique. But, like, kind of generally, sort of, you know, usually routers are implemented, you know, implemented with some RIP distance vector or OSPF-like you know, link state protocol for non-trivial, so I guess for, you know, big networks. For small networks, you know, for simple networks, we can statically configure, you know, you know, e.g. home routers. That configuration doesn't involve, the routing table is very simple for a home router. And usually implemented with kind of MAC learning-like ideas. Ideas plus and spanning tree-like protocol for big networks, big local networks. Yeah.
So, like, next hop returned by OSPF or RIP, would that
be, like, what the gateway is? Question is, the next hop for OSPF or RIP, would that tell you what the gateway should be? Yeah. So that's, they're filling in this table, so they'll tell you which interface to use and which gateway if you aren't directly connected to the relevant network. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, and so that's what I have usually here, because you could absolutely do something like a link state protocol to implement switches with MAC addresses to fill in the tables of this MAC address goes to this port, like just that people usually don't do that. But I've seen proposals for data center designs that do something more like what routers do for an actual kind of data center type thing, scenario where you have a lot of hosts connected and you control all the switches. Okay, so that's on switches. So distance vector. So a distance vector is, you know, for a router X, is a list of the sort of networks or, you know, machines X can reach, and its metric sort of cost to reach them. And sort of distance with DV-based routing, routers share distance vectors with their neighbors and use this information to update their own distance vectors. And kind of example, you know, if router X discovers neighbor Y can reach network A with cost 4, 5, and router X has a cost 3 link to Y, then router X knows can reach Y with cost 8. That's kind of the key idea, and, you know, if we keep sharing distance vectors and making updates, we'll eventually, you know, have, you know, full information about what we can reach with the lowest metric, and we'll track sort of which router to go to, and then we can use this to create a routing table. And I guess, so a tricky thing with DV-based routing is, so the tricky part is updates that increase cost. That if router X thinks, all right, so it should reach it can reach network A with cost 8 via Y, and router Y says its distance to A is now 100. Router X needs to update its distance vector. Right, that's one of the trickier things with distance vector, also the thing people had the most trouble with in the homework, just working through those scenarios. Distance vector, and I guess, should look for alternative sort of ways to get to A. And the other tricky part is we can have the count to infinity problem, which was when something becomes unreachable, nodes won't instantly update their cost to infinity. They'll find a phantom alternate route, because not everyone has realized that a network is unreachable. then everyone will keep you, and then, you know, everyone will roll, then we'll have sort of a loop, we'll have a loop, some loop of paths that try to use this phantom route until cost goes to infinity. And we had some examples of that in the lecture, and sort of the mitigation is sort of limit the maximum cost or use a link state protocol. And sort of versus link state, sort of routers don't just know, learn about sort of the whole network, not just what their neighbors' distances are. And if they're learning about the whole network, then, you know, when we're informing nodes that this node is this link is unreachable, we're actually telling them that. We're not telling them, oh, now I have to go through this other way to get there that I'm not telling you the details about. Okay, so then about RED, or which is random early detection. And so the intuition here is that, you know, we'd like, we'd like to signal that a switch or router's queue is filling up. Without something like ECN, the only way to send this signal is dropping a packet. So the RED solution is drop a packet with some probability when Q is filling up, but not full. Not full, and the goal, goal is that, a TCP connection will see some packet loss and slow down before Qs fill up. And we have to drop a ton of packets. So even though we're deliberately dropping extra packets, we're going to hopefully send a signal that makes that TCP connection not get into a state where we have to like drop a whole ton of packets and they have to resend a whole ton of packets. And this will better utilize our switch or router's buffer capacity. And this is, particularly, filling up, this is, particularly useful because we don't want to, we want to have large queues to sort of minimize, congestion collapse type problems, but just to have more leeway for, congestion. But we don't want the norm to have the high latencies that large queues would give us. And this is a way of managing that problem. Questions about RED? Yeah.
So you would kind of like you determine how full the queue is getting based on the latency, and then you update the probability of dropping from that.
This question: you determine how full the queue is getting based on the latency, update the probability based on that. No, this is something that's implemented solution. This is implemented on the router switch. So we don't need to measure the latency. We can measure the queue usage directly. That answer your question?
Yes, thank
you. Other questions? Yeah, and I guess your question gives up. You were like thinking about when we talked about delay-based congestion control. That's a different thing we can do. That's something we can do that doesn't change the routers and switches, so it has the advantage that don't need to change the routers and switches. Has the disadvantage that that delay signal is a lot less good than the information the router or switch will have. Okay, so the table of encapsulation types. So when we encapsulate, so encapsulation is the idea of carrying sort of one network connection in another. And the table I was trying to show is we have a choice for, you know, encapsulate X and Y. You know, X can be sort of, can be high level, higher layer to lower layer, high level to low level. So like at the high level, we have like HTTP messages, you know, DNS messages. You know, these are high level concepts that we can encapsulate in something else. And then we have like TCP or UDP streams. Or TCP streams or a or series of UDP datagrams, I probably should say. And then we have like IP packets or Ethernet packets. And actually the same as X or Y can be. So we have a choice for both what we're putting in something else and where, what we're putting it in. And there are schemes that kind of end up making a lot of the combinations that are possible. And that was what I was trying to show with that table. And kind of, you know, why would we choose one over the other? You know, why to choose one over the other? So one is sort of how easy is it to capture the network traffic? So, you know, e.g. for TCP streams, we can just, we can make a few small changes to code using sockets. You know, and e.g. for IP packets, we can edit, you know, have our OS support a virtual IP device and edit a edit the routing table without modifying programs at all. Another reason is sort of, you know, what manipulation of the traffic can we easily do? You know, e.g. for HTTP procs, HTTP messages, it's much easier to add, you know, caching, compression, you know, firewall type filtering, etc., if we're working at that level. Or, you know, so that might be a consideration. And, you know, e.g. for, you know, IP Ethernet, it's much easier to, you know, make things, to make the machine appear to be at a different IP to applications if we're collecting information in that way. Different IP sort of. Whereas if we're doing the TCP approach, like that's a bunch of extra kind of, you know, it doesn't look that, it's not going to look the same. And I guess another is overhead. So for, you know, and there's kind of two sides to this. So one is, you know, sort of, e.g. for TCP streams or HTTP, we're implementing these higher layers twice. You know, and maybe that gives us advantages, but, you know, that's probably going to mean higher, you know, probably higher latency. Uh, latency, but maybe sort of optimization opportunities, like we talked like that with, you know, HTTP, for example, and you can imagine similar things with TCP, actually. But, you know, we're going to implement it twice, so it's going to be slower. And I guess also, e.g. for IP or Ethernet in Y, we're sending IP or Ethernet headers multiple times. So we're sending multiple IP and or Ethernet headers when maybe we don't really need, you know, all that information. Yeah, maybe choosing a different layer would avoid this. Yeah. Different combination. Choose different things for X or Y. Yeah, one combination over the other. I'll just write that. Sort of one combination over the other. So there's these different practical considerations. Yeah. And there's probably more I didn't talk, more I'm not thinking of. So why would we want to do this encapsulation at all? Sort of, why at all? So I guess our most common scenarios, we talked about kind of the classic VPN scenario, sort of act as if on network A, but really connected to network B. Example is network A equals UVA, network B equals some hotel somewhere. So that would be an example. That's a kind of classic reason. The other was kind of the VLAN scenario. VLAN scenario, sort of pretend to have a separate local network for phones versus other devices, even though they both use the same physical network infrastructure. Some other examples, so like, tunnel between two company sites, so the company's internal network seems to span multiple office buildings with no direct connection. Or we had the sort of ISP selling sort of a virtual Ethernet connection between two distant sites in a city.
Would there be other different reasons other than trying to end something?
Could there be? Probably. I guess we talked about other reasons. I mean, we talked about one of them. So Tor was sort of for privacy. Sort of privacy, hide origin, the origin of sort of, typically web traffic. And you can probably think of, another example might be that, to make it so a firewall can process traffic that it's not on the normal path for, might be another reason to do this. But probably it's not the best way of doing that. But if your firewall is somewhere else and you want to make it get the connection, this is a way you could do that. And there's probably more reasons to go. But I would say so it's a tool that can be used to solve quote unquote a lot of how do I do X with my network problems. that otherwise don't have an obvious solution. With some overhead cost, like it's not free. Oh, I guess I should put under why to choose under the other sort of, and then the overhead, the other thing was effect on the sort of maximum transmission unit size was an issue with some of them, which can mess up some, you know, if you're expecting UDP datagrams not to be fragmented, you know, can affect which one system you want to use. Okay, so I still have time. Other things I should talk about or follow-ups? Yeah.
So in the context of wireless, I remember there's a slide with the suitability of using RTM and GPS versus carrier sense.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you should choose what one system over another.
Okay. Other. Okay, so RTS, ready to send, clear to send. Kind of is meant, deals with the problem of hidden nodes, primarily deals with the problem of hidden nodes. That typically, that we're, you know, so what this does is that we'll send a short message, send short messages in both directions, so it's likely any node that would interfere will see that the channel is reserved. So kind of our pro is that we typically won't get interference from hidden nodes who can't figure out, who think there's no transmission to interfere with, you know, except if they interfere with directly, you know, except if they, you know, things are exactly badly timed, which would have been a problem either way. But the con is that we have this extra exchange before sending data, which will take time. Which takes time we could have used to send some of the packets of the packet. So this means that sort of intuitively, so probably good to use if our messages are larger, so that extra exchange is less, you know, is, you know, not much of the time. And if we expect, you know, a lot of hidden node problems. And if those aren't true, if our messages are smaller or we don't expect many hidden node problems, it's probably not worth using RTS CTS. Is that sort of question? Okay, anything else I should talk about or turn it over? Okay, so if there's nothing else, I will post this text file and the lecture recording. I have office hour schedule, and I will try to make sure our TA's office hours are correctly scheduled. I think I can do my normal office hour times next week because I'm grading on Tuesday. And my exam, my other exam's late Monday, so.
Is the location of our exam posted somewhere?
It's on SIS.
Oh, okay.
It is this room. But it's on SIS, so. And if it's not this room, I will make an announcement beforehand. And it is the last exam. Yeah, I guess I could try to get another room, but probably not plausible. Okay. So if that's everything. Yeah, so as I said, I'll post this, and yeah, I'll have office hours, I'll let you guys, do you have a question, or?
Oh, no.
No, okay. And yeah, I'll have office hours, I'll try to answer things on Piazza, and we also, I know we need to get some grading done, which also, there's the late deadline for wireless that hasn't passed yet, so obviously some of that's not going to happen this week, but...